Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Escaping Cerberus, the podcast where we rewatch, reminisce and review everything Doctor Who from 2005 to present. My name is Rich and I'm joined by the one person who always seems to talk out of her ask. Not, it's Amy.
I wondered what you were going to refer to me as this week.
It's all I think about when watching. I don't pay attention to the episode. I'm just there like, right, what can I take from this to turn it into some way to insult Amy?
Thank you.
How I do things.
Thank you.
Welcome to episode one of series two. Even though last time was kind of episode one, sort of.
We'll call it episode zero.
Yeah, we'll call that zero, or on our file names, we just put EX because it's like it's the special and Christmas or Xmas, if you want to call it that. Welcome to the podcast. Now, much like last time. Much like how every time it's going to be. We're going to open with an apology. It has been like 3 weeks since the last podcast. And
sorry.
We do apologize. If you are listening to this podcast, it means that you've most likely listened to last time. And as we've said, like, life is kind of returning to normal, but not, because we've, in the interim between the last podcast and this one, the Northeast, which is where we're based, went into its own little lockdown, and now the UK's back in. Everything's
God
on fire again.
What?
It's all those damn students that we sent back to university so we can use them as a scapegoat to blame them when the second spike comes. Thank you, Tories. Thank you, Boris.
But we're not here to talk politics.
We're not here to talk about that, but yeah, we've had life come in and get going. Last week, we were going to do the podcast, and then the internet for the entire estate where we live went down.
Like,
just completely died.
What time was it? About 6 o'clock? 7 o'clock?
It was literally like just after I'd finished work or something.
And
we'd just come downstairs to make dinner and then watch the episode and then start recording and then
kaput.
The whole internet went down. And then BT were like, hey, it's going to be 1 a.m. by the time it's back up again. And it's like, well, I guess we'll not
do the podcast, and sadly that is the only night we can really do it now.
Yeah, based on how things are, we can only really record the podcast on a Wednesday night, so that's why we're doing it on Wednesday night. But obviously when the internet goes down, we can't. And you might think, hang on, but you guys live in the same house, why do you need the internet? And the answer to that is the way that we record this is we both sit in our own rooms on Discord recording our own microphones, because the first episode of the podcast, Rose, you might have listened to, it's a bit echoey because we're both in the same room and it just didn't work.
So we call each other on Discord.
Yeah, we literally sit looking at each other on the webcams when we're literally a wall apart. Hang on, I want to see if you can...
Oh, you definitely heard that.
Yeah, I'll probably just mute my mic. If I remember to do that, I'll mute my channel on the edit for this so you can just hear what Amy can hear from her mic.
Yeah.
We're literally next door to each other, but this is how we record it. Hence why we couldn't do the podcast last week. Thank you, internet. So apologies for the long wait. We are back. Welcome back to Escaping Cerberus. Welcome to series two. It's time to go back to New Earth with our 10th Doctor, David Tennant, aired on, I need to scroll down my screen.
Are we into 2006 now?
the 15th of April 2006.
Oi, oi.
So about a year after the airing of Series 1, unsurprisingly. Written by Russell T. Davies. We're going back to New Earth.
Hey.
So we open this episode with Tennant in the TARDIS doing his thang.
Oh, beautiful shots. Up,
playing with his balls.
He does. The shots of him, like, does. The shots of his trainers walking in with the beautiful blue light and just like, oh, I just love that opening sequence. It's like, yes, give me all of the sexy new Doctor.
I think it's like showing him at the TARDIS, the first thing you really see of the series. The special is kind of not an anomaly, but it's like you shouldn't treat it like the beginning of his era. Like, because it kind of is, but it's more of the handover.
Yeah.
So he, this is him and the TARDIS, and this is the production team and the writers and the whole show saying, this is,
show him off,
your new, this is your new Doctor. This is him at the TARDIS. You can see him flying it. You see, he knows what he's doing. He is the Doctor. Get used to it.
Yes.
And we cut outside to a very, very brief thing with Jackie and Mickey. I wonder when they filmed that specifically.
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing, because it's such a short scene.
They probably waited until the recording block for perhaps... I'm trying to think of what it would be. Because obviously Mickey does board the TARDIS.
Unless they did it in the last series.
It would have been in school reunion. I'm thinking of the episode when they're back on Earth in present day. So maybe that's when they recorded it. Or
maybe.
Could be towards the end of the series. When there's a point at the end of the series where they're in like a playground. In Army of Ghosts, and it kind of looks like a playground there, so maybe they recorded it then. It depends on what the shooting and release schedule was like, really. But yeah, there's
they might
a very,
have done
very
it during
scene.
Series 1.
No, because...
It's a very,
a
very
point.
Short scene.
That's a good point. Tennant's not actually there. They maybe recorded it during the Christmas special? Nah.
Who knows?
So. Anyway.
Not that it matters.
Very, 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 very short scene with Jackie and Mickey, and it's, you know, Rose getting in the TARDIS with her bag and her coat and all of her stuff. And the Doctor doesn't even make a comment. I thought he'd be like, what, are you staying? He's staying the night?
Yeah.
Or something. Like,
cash.
So many companions just jump on the TARDIS without any stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Rose all packed up and ready.
Yeah, that is the one thing I noticed. Like, Rose does that a lot. She packs. Like, a
lot. There's just, like, the TARDIS has a wardrobe. We see it in the Christmas special. And it's always implied. It's like, assumedly, the Doctor's just got, like, an entire Primark in the TARDIS that any companions could just walk into and be like, oh, I'll have one of them, please.
Maybe.
Like, could you imagine, like, the Doctor just picking up clothes or just buying clothes for the TARDIS? Or maybe the TARDIS just makes them.
Or, separate opinion thing. What's the word I'm looking for? Theory. Maybe it's all of Rose's clothes that she gets that gets left behind when she gets left on the parallel.
Yeah, maybe it is. It's just companions past. It's like, hey, you're wearing Polly's clothes. Oh, she's dead. Probably. I don't know what happens
to Holly. Hey, lol. It's maybe the TARDIS absorbs it and just seamstresses out something new.
Yeah. It's a sewing printer the TARDIS has. One you can plug your Game Boy into, because that was a thing back in the 90s.
Oh my god.
Anyway, so that particular scene, this very, very quick thing. Something I want to point out. When Rose says goodbye to Mickey, now Mickey throughout this little section, he's got a face like a slapped arse. Understandably. A, Rose is going away again.
Bye.
B, Eccleston's gone, and as somebody said in the comments on the last episode, is this series going to just be you guys simping on David Tennant? If so, can it be 65% or more? Yes.
Yes.
Tennant's here. He's looking hot. He's a bit of a snack. I'd like to take a bite out of him, please.
A bit of a snack? He's the whole bloody meal.
He's like an entire buffet.
He's a buffet of a man.
He's a buffet of a man. My goodness me. So Mickey's pretty pissed that this is the case. And he kisses her, and she seems very excited. Oh, I'm back off with the Doctor again. And Mickey's, you can see that he's sad. We talked about this during Boomtown and also Christmas Invasion. Just like, Mickey hates this life. He really does. We do get to see more of Mickey and how he evolves this series. So look forward to that if you've not seen it before. But there's a point right at the end, just before she jumps back in the TARDIS, where she kisses him, or they kiss. And then Mickey says, I love you. And Rose says, bye.
Yeah, it's a bit awkward. Because, I mean, I turned to you, didn't I? And I was like, wait, are they back together?
Are they still a couple?
Like, did they ever re-become a couple?
Like, it feels like Mickey will wait for Rose.
Oh, forever.
He's not going to get a Rory the Roman kind of scenario. But he will wait. But Rose just sort of... She kind of pies him off. Like, it does feel like she sort of uses him, like, when she's back.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, it's Mickey. Yeah. And Mickey in the stupid side of him, or the side that we'd probably turn around and be like, Mickey, you're literally being Mickey the Idiot.
Yeah.
You need to stop chasing after her. We all know somebody that's been like that with people. It's like, just... Leave
Stop.
Them alone. Stop going back to them.
But more to the point, he's only 19. Like, I mean,
they'd be 20 now.
Okay,
surely.
20, five, whatever. A, that's going to make him a bit for love. But B, you're 19/20. Go out, get a hot chick, get over it. Like
the pubs are still open. It's 2006.
Dude.
You've got 14 years till the pubs close at 10. Like, just get out there.
Get out there and pull some, catch a goat. Do you not remember that advert?
Did you say catch a goat?
Yeah, do you not remember that advert? There was an advert. Oh, what was it for? It was for like... I want to say it was for like maybe Tic Tacs or a beer or something like that. Yeah, don't ask. But there was an advert back in the day that said that literally the main line of the advert was catch a goat you've pulled, because it was like a thing of get your coat.
It was for Vodafone 360.
Okay, well, whatever it was for, it said
actually,
catch
you
a
know
goat
what?
You've
now,
pulled.
Now you say that, that does ring a bell.
And I say frequently, like occasionally, I'll just go, hey, catch a goat, you've pulled. And it just like, it stuck with me.
Yep. Matey asks his friends for pickup lines, he's in a pub, and he gets, grab your coat, you've pulled, and he says it wrong and makes the girl laugh.
Yeah.
If anyone who listens to this podcast remembers Vodafone 360, you will know how much of a dumpster fire that service was.
Mm-hmm.
Because my first ever smartphone was a Samsung M1 with Vodafone 360 running on it, and it was awful. It was so bad. They
but
canned
hey,
it after like a
catch
year.
Catch a goat,
but
you've
anyway,
pulled.
Catch a goat, you've pulled. Mickey, I just feel bad for.
Mm.
He's being used, and he's so madly in love with Rose that he can't see that. Thankfully he does
eventually.
I'll say no more about that, but
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel bad for him. You can see it in his face. Like, you see the way that when the TARDIS dematerializes, you can see there's a really lovely high shot of the lamp.
Yeah.
And you can just see Jackie and Mickey just looking at the TARDIS, and they both look distraught. They're like, good, she, you know, this could be the last time we see her. We just don't know.
And the thing is, they don't know when she's going to come back either, because, excuse me, being a time traveller, it's like, you know, she could come back in 20 seconds, or she could come back in 20 years.
I mean, that's what she says to Jackie at the end of
I'll see you in 5 seconds.
I'll see you in 10 seconds.
Yeah, whatever
it
is.
She says 10 seconds and just walks inside looking distraught, and Mickey goes, sits on the bin again, because that's what you do.
Cash.
Like,
as a trendy 19-year-old lad, you sit on bins.
Yeah, it's like they didn't need to have that whole thing in to say, you know, here's the reintroduction to Mickey and Jackie and stuff like that. They didn't need to do that, but they did.
Mm-hmm. I don't
just
know.
To
I think
reiterate.
It was quite a nice.
Oh
opening.
No, it's like they could have easily just had it be that Rose just comes in through the front door.
Mm.
Like, they could have just cut that whole section out and like, she's here with a bag. Tennant's got the TARDIS all warmed up and ready to go, and off they go. But they still made the effort to shoot this thing,
yeah.
As we said, at some weird arbitrary point in the shooting schedule, because they wouldn't have done all of that just for this episode. They'd
mm-hmm.
have done it in another block. And yeah, they put that in to reiterate that Jackie's probably still not sure. She's obviously, after Christmas Invasion, she is a lot more welcoming of the Doctor. She likes him a hell of a lot more.
Yeah.
But she's still not sure.
I think she kind of is almost like resigned to it now, because she turns and walks away far before Mickey does.
I think maybe it's just like, it's out of my hands now.
Yeah. Like, I'm her mother, I can only tell her so many times.
I've been through the pits of hell. I've had the, you know, did you say I've had the pits of hell in my own living room at one point?
Something like
Christmas
that.
Invasion,
maybe, I'm not sure.
Towards the end of the series. I think it is actually, it's in the chip shop or something during Passing of the Way. She's like, the pits of hell in my living room, and Lord knows I hated that man, but now I
have
him because he sent you home to me. So, yeah, that's that's how that opens, and it just makes me sad to think of Mickey.
But anyway, I sort of gloss past it almost in like a weird way. The only thing I questioned was
this,
like,
is how you treat your boyfriends, what? Then, Amy.
I mean, only you. The rest of them are fine. Hey, if you're going to call me a thing every week, I get to say that you're not my only boyfriend. No, I'm joking. That's really weird. Let's not go down that road.
You heard it here first, folks. Amy is two-timing.
I'm really not.
Is it one of you? Is it one of you in the cut? No, I'm not going to talk about that.
No, let's not. Let's move on.
Let's move on. So, New Earth. New Earth. It's the year...
Somebody count that and tell me if that was 15 times.
Shut up. It was like, it's the year 5,023,000,000,023. I mean, actually, Tennant says right before the sting, before the titles, was like, we're further than we've ever gone before. And then you said, but they've gone to the end of the world. It's like, yes, Amy, this takes place after the end of the
world.
Yeah,
and I just sort of forgot that. I think if I'd watched the next 15 seconds of the episode.
/Apple/26 is before the year 5,023,000,023. So, yeah.
Wait, they go through a whole weird-ass numbering system of point something
in,
Apple 26
in
just
one,
to turn around and go, heh, 23.
Yeah, like Eccleston is, maybe he's just him showing off, but there's definitely been other times when there have been like weird arbitrary things in numbers.
Mm.
And yeah, that's what Eccleston says when they arrive on platform one, 5.5/Apple/26, 5 billion years in your future. And then Tennant's just like, it's the year 5,023,000,023. And it's like, cool,
I can't
bro,
be bothered with
fine.
All that Apple rubbish.
Apple grass.
Oh, that's they've Apple have taken over the universe, guys.
Oh, God. Just... And they recreate this, they remake this episode now, and rather than it be like the green moon on the side of the building, it's just Tim Cook's face.
I was thinking instead of grass, it's just like... AirPods just sticking up through the floor.
Apple pencils. Good
pen, pineapple, apple pen.
This podcast is over.
We've gone
back to peak 2016 memes.
Filled with nostalgic crap today.
Out of all the nostalgic crap you go for, you go for
pen,
pineapple, flipping pen. Really?
That was great, though. You gotta be honest. Anyway,
it was a bop.
Pen, pineapple, apple pen.
Anyway, so yeah, they're looking over the bay, whatever, looking at New York. If that was 23, then
no, you're looking for 15 actually.
Is it 15?
15. It's technically the 15th New York, so that would be New York.
Oh, whatever. Right. Yeah, whatever. See, they're looking over the bay. They're looking at that, and it's like, okay, something's going on. There's this weird bloke with, like, weird patterns on his face looking at a crystal ball, and there's something in the grass with a red eye, and it's sneaking up on them. And then they instantly ruin the surprise by showing that it's a spider from End of the World.
Yeah, could have done without that, because it could have been, like, the mystery. I mean, admittedly, they reveal that it's Cassandra, like, maybe... I don't know, a minute and a half later.
It's not like a huge build-up, but it's like they could have at least not ruined it from the off.
I suppose. I don't know whether it's kind of like a, oh, I recognise that, but where do I recognise that from?
I mean, it depends on how much people were paying attention, because in reality, the spiders aren't that prevalent through End of the World. It's much more of like a character study and like stuff between Jabe and the Doctor and Rose and Cassandra.
But I kind of feel like
spiders, bits and bobs. So yeah, I'm sure some people are like, hang on a minute, I recognise that from last series, but I can't pinpoint where.
Yeah.
Whereas for us, we're just like, I mean, obviously we knew it's Cassandra anyway.
Yeah.
But like looking at this from a perspective of what if you were watching this for the first time, but you've watched series one, which you should do, don't skip nine.
Mm-hmm.
It's a spider from End of the World.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, cool. And then when you hear a voice, fair enough, and then you see a face, fair. Mm-hmm. But like the fact that it's a spider, literally there's like two or three shots that just didn't have to be.
Yeah,
there.
They could have just done the red eye thing.
Do the red eye. We don't know who Chip is. Kind of like how in Bad Wolf, they show the shots of the Daleks' eye stalk, or you see the reflection of the spheres.
Yeah.
When the controller gets teleported there. Mm-hmm. And again, if they didn't show it in the next time trailer, that would have been more than enough for people who know the Daleks to go, oh my god, it's the Daleks. And other people who maybe aren't as dorky like us to go, oh, actually...
Excuse me, like you. I'm not as much of a dork as you are. Not about Doctor Who, anyway.
You are trying so hard to not be a dork about Doctor Who, and I'm disappointed in you.
No, I'm not trying so hard.
You are a dork about Doctor Who.
Okay,
don't be ashamed of who you are, Amy.
I'm not ashamed of who I am. I'm a nerd and proud.
Good. Correct answer.
I've always been a nerd. I was the nerdy kid at school who always did their work.
I genuinely... Right. At school, we always... Like, everyone talks about their... They have their phases. They have their chaff phase. They have their goth phase. They have their rap music phase. And genuinely, I feel like I'm the only person...
Nerd.
Who's never, ever had a phase other than just being a gigantic dork.
Nerd.
Exactly.
Even when you were young, your dad used to call you
a dork. I didn't have a chaffy phase. I didn't have a heavy metal phase. I'm just like, I do ballet and I like Doctor Who.
Not just ballet. You do tap and contemporary as well.
I do tap as well, yeah. Actually, I did ballroom, I did jazz, I did loads.
Well.
I sound sarcastic, I'm deadly serious.
No, you're serious.
But yeah, that was me at school. There was no phases for me. I did have a slight...
wear more makeup, wear Ugg boots, wear hoop earrings phase. But I wouldn't say that I was like a super chav. Like, I was
chav,
trying
that's back to.
Hard to be liked because not a lot of people liked me.
Understandably.
Hey,
I mean,
that's mean. I'm sure not a lot of people
liked you too. Everyone looked.
No,
they didn't.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was more of just a, hey, I think this is trying to be cool. And then I promptly
grew out of it.
And then realised that actually what I was a giant nerd. And that is fine.
Yeah.
And I think I realised that when I discovered I liked poetry.
Oh, yeah.
You can't really be a poet.
It does occasionally come back to me that you used to do a lot of like spoken word stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That was anyway. Moving on. So we go to the hospital, the new. I think it's just called like a New Earth Hospital. It hasn't got a name.
Yeah.
I don't think. I'm gonna double check this.
I was gonna say.
Sisters of Plenitude, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Is
the name of cats.
The cat people. Yeah, it's just the new New York Hospital, I guess.
Fair.
Which looks remarkably like the lobby of the Wales of the Cardiff Millennium Centre.
Surprise.
Yeah, it's like. I think I might have mentioned this on the pod. I can't remember exactly, but back in 2007, if you watched CBBC and Blue Peter religiously like I did,
mm-hmm.
Growing up, 2007 was my first year of secondary school, and that year they did a competition called My Movie, and they did like a sort of watered down. Sort of variant of the competition like the 2 years after, but it wasn't the same level as it was when they first did it in 2007. And what they did is the BBC came out to various places all over the country with a camera, and you would go and you would pitch a film idea. And this was obviously before the time where you could just record it on your phone and send it in mm-hmm. to the BBC. They literally had to come out. So they came out to Blackfriars Theatre in Boston. They came to Boston.
Where I did all my dance classes, they came there.
I know! It was like... I remember because like, I was obsessed with filmmaking and stuff. It's one of the things that, you know, it's one of the reasons why I pursued media at uni and mm-hmm. hence why now I'm working at What Culture. So that's what I pursue. That's what I was passionate about. And I did this competition and I pitched a film idea. And yeah, they came to Boston. It's like, I don't know how far I'm going to have to go to get to this BBC thing. Because I was like, no, I'm going to Boston. It's the middle of nowhere. Who cares about mm-hmm. this place? And yet they came to Boston. So I went there and did that. Got through to the next stages. And that ended up in me going to Cardiff on May the 5th, 2007. It was the day after my birthday. And we went to the Millennium Centre and we got put into groups and we had to shoot short films.
Oh, cool.
Over the course of a day. And Gethin Jones was there. Because there were four locations they did it. I think it was like London, Cardiff, Manchester and Edinburgh or something. Or Birmingham and Edinburgh.
Who?
Gethin Jones.
Who?
Did you watch Blue Peter?
Yeah.
Gethin. He was Welsh.
I don't remember.
Right, okay. But he was there and we shot stuff there. And when the Doctor and Rose walk into the entrance of the Millennium Centre, there's a shot of Rose with a stairwell behind her. And I'm like, that is literally up those stairs to the left. There was a big ass room that had loads of IMAX in there, and that's where we went and edit. We had all of our talks and we edited our films in there, and we just shot the films in the Millennium Center. You go up those stairs and you go, I think it was to the right, and you kind of go all the way along that massive room. There's like a bar at the end, and that's where we shot our film.
Cool.
Can
you remember
so
what
like
it was?
That, Yeah, we did this. We did a horror film. I think we had to pull things out of a hat.
Oh,
if I remember, I think we got
well, like a genre,
and then we got a couple of props.
Right,
and we got. I think the horror, and then a plastic cup and some maggots. Or at least they're the things I remember specifically.
Oh,
like fake maggots.
Yeah, obviously.
And we had this girl where she had a Bluetooth microphone. Obviously, this is 2007. It's like that's like cutting edge
stuff.
Wow. So, but it was like, you know, those like old school like phone earpieces that were like really big.
Yeah, yeah.
That you clip into your ear. It was like that. It was massive. This huge Bluetooth microphone, and we shot with a relatively good camcorder, not like a mm-hmm. super cheap one, but it was an all right one. And it had this girl get this phone call, and she takes a drink and she pulls a maggot out of her mouth. Well, she didn't pull it out of her mouth, she had it in her hand.
Yeah.
She pretended to take a swig, and then she looked down and the maggots are spelled with the word die on the table. And then she ran, and we literally filmed this girl like running from one end of the Millennium Center to the other, and then she ran past me and another kid, and both of us were obsessed with YouTube.
Right.
And he told me what his YouTube channel was, and to this day, I have never found it. So if you went to my movie in Cardiff, and you were this kid who chatted to this short little pipsqueak with long hair who couldn't shut up about Doctor Who, that was me. And she ran past us, like, she ran in between us, and we were, like, chatting and stuff, and we'd, like, fly out the way. And then she ran into a lift, and inside the lift was a girl with his hood over her head with maggots on her face, and she was the person doing the, like, tried to run away and ended up running straight into the villain of the week. And the best thing about it was, is we realised when we were filming, because we had, like, a set time to film and then a set time to edit,
mm-hmm.
we didn't film a scream. So what we had to do is we had these old, like, iMac G1, G2, like a really old iMacs. Not like the fat, there was some of the first flat screen ones. And we used the really crap microphone that's, like, next to the webcam.
Oh, dear.
And we got this girl over, and we were like, can you just record a scream for us? And so, like, literally in the middle of this big room with all these groups of kids editing their videos, this girl just proper, like...
Screamed
as loud as she could, so we could have a sound file. And because we couldn't just transfer it to the other group, because each group was like, there were like, I don't know, five or six groups that made films, and then each of those groups split into two, and there were two edits of each film.
Right.
And we watched all of them, so we watched both versions of each film back to back when it came to the end of the day. And the other group looked over to us like, holy crap, what was that? And then realised, oh no, we need that as
well. Yeah, we're going to have to get
so
to
she went
this
over
again.
And did it again. And we still didn't give anyone any warning that we were going to do that. And somewhere, I obviously don't have it with me. I feel like I know where I last saw it, but it was something that I had during university that I don't seem to have now. And I hope I haven't lost it forever. There is, I do have a DVD with those films on
no
it.
No way.
But I still can't find it.
Oh God.
One day
I'll have to
see if they can fish out this DVD, because I feel like I know where I last had it during uni, but the thing I had it in at uni I don't have now.
Oh, man.
But I know that I took some bits and bobs from that box, and I still have some bits here. In fact, I still have my Blue Peter badges and the t-shirt I got with my movie.
God, I
still
really
have
hope
it in my drawer right now. But yeah, I had this, there is a DVD with this film on it, and I am, what, 12 years old?
Oh my God, long-haired Richard.
Hair. Like Danny Jones from McFly, because that's why I grew it, making a film in Cardiff. And so, yeah, that was in the Millennium Center. That was literally that lobby thing that the Doctor and Rose walk into. That was literally right there.
That's cool.
And there's a picture on my parents' kitchen wall back home of all of us sat in front of the waterfall mm-hmm. that the TARDIS lands in front of, the one that the Torchwood, you know, the flashy entrance to Torchwood is. There's a photo of all of us in front of that with Geth and Jones from Blue Peter.
Cool.
And I cherish those memories. I didn't get to the final. A friend of mine from Boston, who also auditioned for it in Boston, who I went to school with, he got to the final.
Fair.
I didn't.
Sad Big face. Rip. You're obviously just crap.
I'm obviously not good enough. My performance in that 2 seconds in that film were absolutely terrible.
They were
so
awful.
That's that little segue to... I'm
that little
I'm
5 minute segue.
It's about like 20 minutes. But that was something I did in 2007 in Cardiff. It's the only time I've been to Cardiff so far. I've still never been back.
Oh, me and my sister went to the Doctor Who exhibition, funnily enough.
You see, I went to the Doctor Who experience with my ex in London when it first opened
mm-hmm.
there. So we went to the OG Doctor Who experience,
yeah.
and it still had
mm-hmm.
the whole 3D thing with the Weeping Angels and fly the TARDIS, but this was back when it was Matt Smith's first TARDIS.
Right.
The one that looks like a set out of something from CBeebies.
Oh, yeah.
I still stand by that opinion.
I like it. But,
yeah.
I like
anyway,
it.
Anyway, so yeah, they get to the realize like halfway through.
Oh, my God.
And we've already just got to them getting into the hospital.
Whoops.
Get to the hospital, doctors talk about a little shop, and they do the lift thing, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
The disinfectant thing, and it's just a bit of fun, mm-hmm. bit of slapstick silliness.
I love the way that he like has to try really hard to not be shocked when the water hits him, because he kind of does like a little
flinch.
Jolt, and he's like, ooh, and then he's like, no, I need to be acting, whereas she can just go all out and be like, ah.
It's almost like a did they not tell Billy Piper?
That's what
was
I was
happening.
Wondering. Did they tell her it was going to happen, or did they just? Well, obviously they would have told her like the scene because they needed to know. Like
maybe
what was going on. Maybe they didn't tell her when it was going to happen, and they just kind of went, so getting in here, we're going to spray you with water, but we're not going to tell you when.
They probably
we're just
went, okay,
do
we'll
it.
Count you down in five, and then just did
it. Yeah.
Because then that reaction from her would have been genuine. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Doctor goes up to Ward 26 because his psychic paper is calling him. Pretty iffy tracking on the shot when he flips open the psychic paper, because the writing starts when he moves it, and you can see the tracking is ever so slightly off on that shot.
It's 2006.
Anyway.
What are you going to do?
There are multiple instances of pretty shite CGI in this, so
we'll get to those. Well, hopefully
we'll get to those. And Rose goes down because obviously Cassandra is what.
I'm sorry, she what now?
You made that dirty, Amy. Honestly,
Rose descends in the lift.
Rose descends to the depths to go meet a man about a trampoline.
Oh dear.
So yeah, she's back down there, and we have the banter between her and Cassandra. The whole thing about Cassandra having been, you know, torn apart and talking out her ass, and those kind of, there's so much wordplay.
Oh my God, I love
that
whole
because
sequence.
There's a point when the doctor and Rose are walking into the hospital, and Cassandra's there like sort of quibbling to herself, and she's about to say bitch, and then it just cuts back to the Doctor and Rose, and Rose says, bit rich, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Or something. So, obviously, lots of wordplay, and then the same thing happens. So you're talking about your ask not.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so much stupid humour, pure old humour.
I just love
humor.
It. That whole
Russell
banter
doing
sequence
his thing.
Between Billy Piper and Zoe Wanamaker, is that her name? Yeah.
Zoe Wanamaker.
Rose and Cassandra is just brilliant. Like, that whole sequence of them, like, back and forth in. And Rose is like, I like the fact that Rose is super confident in that scene as well. Like,
yeah, I mean, she's been on, you know, so much. We don't really know the time frame. Like you were saying right at the beginning of the episode when we were watching it, how long has this been since the Christmas invasion? Mm-hmm. We don't know.
Because
I'd like to think that with the Doctor going in to have Christmas dinner, he'll happily put his feet up for 2 weeks.
That's what I said. They probably just waited till New Year.
Yeah,
just, like,
just thought, I don't know,
Happy
I'll,
New
I'll,
Year.
I'll wait off this regeneration, spend it with Rose, maybe get a cheeky sonic polish in before we leave.
No.
I had to think of something there.
I'm sorry, and I made it dirty.
I was just trying to say that Rose went down the lift.
You don't polish
you
your
made
Sonic.
It dirty. I was coming
you
into this saying, I'll happily polish David Tennant's Sonic.
I
so.
Did what? I mean, I would, but that's not the point.
And then we have the weird psychograft thing that transports Cassandra into Rose. And interestingly, the fact that her trampoline skin just disappears.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to see it just go and just flop over.
Just like explode again.
She just disappears.
They probably
when she
didn't have the budget for it.
Rose.
They wasted it in series one. The
maybe
Cassandra
that's one of
explosion
maybe,
budget.
Maybe the realization of how much it cost them to do Cassandra's face. Apparently, as we must have talked about last time, in on the End of the World episode of this podcast, that so much of the budget for CGI in series one went into The End of the World.
Mm-hmm.
And surely doing, like, I don't know whether there was any performance capture back then.
Yeah.
Or at least, I think there was performance capture, but whether they got it in for Doctor Who for Zoe Wanamaker, I don't know. Because it's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's bang on. It doesn't look like motion capture. But so it must have been animating that whole sequence must have been such a pain. And maybe Russell was like, I want to bring Cassandra back. And the BBC turned around and said, yeah, you can, but you're not getting the same budget for animating a flat bit of skin with a face. So, and hence why the whole process of moving between people is written in.
But I think it makes it a good, like, a good little
It does give it a good change. It would be a bit difficult to have Cassandra try and do more from there if she can't move from mm-hmm. there, because she's got her...
The word I'm looking for.
What
makes it like a... there's a word I'm looking for. Carry on, it'll come to me.
Okay. Like, there's not much... Unless she's, like, taking over the hospital. Like, she's got the Sisters of Plenitude under her thumb.
Mm-hmm.
That wherever the Doctor and Rose go in the hospital, that she's always going to have some kind of presence.
Yeah.
But she's literally stuck in the basement. She can't do anything.
Trope.
So that...
Trope is... It's a good trope. Trope was the word I was looking for.
Trope.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
That whole process of moving into the Rose just keeps the story moving.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing, like, when the Doctor goes upstairs and he's in War 26 and he sees the Duke of Manhattan, who is for some reason British, as is his secretary. Literally the only American you hear during that whole episode is right at the end.
In the NNYPD.
When the NNYPD turn up and it's like, NNYPD, don't move. And it's very blatantly American, but everything else is British. And like, when I mentioned that to you, you said, oh, it could just be because, you know, the
world's like
reshuffled
itself.
I mean,
it's not like split into America now, like, anymore, is it? Like,
but I don't want to make a gross generalization about the Americans, but it's like, they like what is theirs.
They do.
And they are going to stick to it.
However,
so I couldn't imagine, like, Americans of the year 5,023,000,000 not being like, oh yeah, you know, come and be with us. They'll be like, no, New York is ours.
You say maybe. They say obviously it's named like New York, but we forget about the fact that we have a place called York. So maybe it's our New York. New York.
There's a village not far from where I'm from that is called New York.
Exactly. So maybe it's that. So that would explain why it was British. Who knows?
But anyway, Petrifold Regression, I think it's called. Mm-hmm. I've always loved that name of that disease turning to stone. It sounds really cool.
It does.
And then there's the face of Bo being all tired and stuff,
being
and love his head
old
just
and
take it.
Stuff.
Head full of big face.
I love how she's like, he's dying of old age, and then all of a sudden he's like, nope, perky again.
No, I'm good.
I'm good. I was just having a second wind.
All I needed was a good sonic polish and I'm good to go.
I was going to say all I needed was a good dump, but you said it, you know.
It's not the same. Like, there's all the infected at the door. You've got the Duke of Manhattan, like, putting all his body weight behind the door. There's just not the same with a shovel going, I hate my job.
The face
I hate
of
this
Bo's
job.
Just constipated. That's why he was so poorly.
There's just a shot of not the same sitting there. You just see a face of people go,
Yeah, okay, I'm
and
good
open
now.
His eyes and it's like, oh, how you doing, face? Oh, God, that just hit me. Oh.
It wouldn't escape his tank, though, surely.
It just, like, floats in like a fish poo. Just goes across his, like, eyes. And it's like, you just see that and hear a, boom. Nurse, I need a clean.
I need a sieve.
Not the same, fetch the net.
Fetch the sieve. We've got a floater.
She pulls out a clipboard like, right, no more fibre for you, big boy. For those of you who can't see Amy, which is all of you, she is crying. It's amazing how this, like, we've reached this point where we have this podcast where we talk about Doctor Who and we've got, like, we start to go off topic and for some reason today it's gone to the face of Bo crapping himself in his own little tank. But where would it come from? Is it like the goddamn, I think it's the Kaka demon in the original Doom games? When it turns away from you, the sprite has got like a hole on its butt,
I reckon,
like the back of its head.
I was going to say, I reckon down the back of the face of Bo's head, it's just a big bum crack.
There's the question for you, comment section and people on Twitter, @WhoCulture, # escaping Casturbarus, so you can see the spelling in the title. How does Mr. Bo...
God.
Oh, God.
How does the face of Bo poop? That's what we want you to answer for us.
The 10 biggest unanswered questions in Doctor Who.
How does the face of Bo poop?
Number 2, who really is the timeless child? Number 1, how does the face of Bo go for number 2?
And the thumbnail is just a big arse next to the face of Bo's head.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promote for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Or I just get the poo emoji and Photoshop the face of Bo's face onto it instead of the smile.
Just no, just little poos all around his tank. I'm really sorry, listeners, what has happened?
I really hope that those of you listening to this are laughing along with us and not,
like, sitting there or on your walk or on the train thinking, why the hell
do I listen to this?
Subscribe to these idiots.
Sincerest apologies.
Rose comes back upstairs. Rose comes back up from the depths. And she's with the doctor and she's acting all weird because she asks Chip, how does she talk? Old Earth Cockney, apparently. Hello, Governor.
Up the apples and pears.
I can't Adam and Eve. and she snogs the doctor because it's like, hello, I'm right here. And... oh my god, Peter person, a sexy person, let me chew your face off. And that's that initial trigger for the doctor thinking, hang on a minute, so it's not right.
Yeah, he kind of looks at her like, I mean, obviously he's in shock from being kissed, yeah. But then I think he's like, hang on a second, Rose wouldn't do this. And then he's like...
Rose is very, like, coy and shy around me, so she won't... Unless she's been down, unless there's a bar down there and she's had a couple of shots.
Maybe.
She's on the sauce and just
unless
fancies
she's gone out and got
her,
plastered while I've been up here trying to fix
exactly,
things.
Exactly, yeah. But I've realised I've just skipped a little thing that I mentioned to you while we watched it. The scene when Cassandra is Rose and she's looking at herself in that like reflector. She's like, you know, sort of putting her hand down her bum. She's got her cleavage out and stuff like that. Apparently, they got lots of complaints.
What a surprise.
Back in the day.
That's because people are prudes and they can't appreciate a woman loving her body.
Exactly. It's just like, oh, I can't be doing with the idea of, oh, look, here's someone looking hot.
Or maybe it was because it was supposed to be like a family TV show and they thought that was too sexual.
Yeah, potentially. I mean... There have been companions in the past who've been. I think is it Leela in the original, like in the classic series. She used to wear stuff that looked pretty low cut. Most of the promo images of her was quite
low cut. But then again,
it
was an old time.
That was an older time. But at the end of the day, the idea of sex selling is still something that very much exists today.
Absolutely.
No, it's not as on the nose anymore, thank God. But yeah, that was something that got complained about. But the Doctor and. Rose go into the underbelly, the depths, the secret place of the hospital, and find they're not called
clones?
The Flesh, because I don't know what you call them.
I mean, the Sisters of Plenitude call him the Flesh, don't they?
They call them like just Flesh.
I mean, they say like the Flesh is alive and stuff, or like the Flesh is whatever.
Artificially grown humans, test subjects, something along those lines. And it's like, the Doctor like obviously jumps on this very quickly. He's like, this is not okay. And we get to see this, we get to see the fire from Tennant here. Because like in The Christmas Invasion, he's very much, he has those comedic moments, like the quoting the Lion King. And he has the like it's a fighting hand. He's like he's there in a serious situation, but he's kind of making light of it. And then you see the much more like blunt, no second chances sort of a man, and you get a bit of that anger with him with Harriet Jones at the end of Christmas Invasion, and yet here he goes ballistic.
He really does, doesn't he? And it almost feels kind of out of character because like he never. Like, he very, very, very rarely goes that kind of mad. And I don't know whether it's because he's worried because by this point he's seen what the Sisters of Plenitude are doing to the clones. So maybe he's worried that they've done something like that to Rose, in which case I can understand.
That obviously leads it to, I mean, understandably, he would be very annoyed about that because, of course he would. Mm-hmm. Like, look what they're doing. So you see that fire from him straight away. It's really great to see. It's something that other doctors in the future, I say other doctors, it's more, for me personally, Matt Smith, I've never seen...
Yeah, he doesn't have that anger.
Matt Smith's angry is not...
Not angry. It's just not, kind it, of...
It's a bit... It's a bit slapstick. Yeah. It's a bit camp.
I think it's kind of always was, though, with his doctor, wasn't it? Like
it always was. I'm not disputing that, but... I never got that same feeling of anger from Matt Smith as I have
from David
Tennant or Eccleston or especially Capaldi.
Yeah.
And I, like getting to see that straight away, like even I'd forgotten that he gets that angry.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that I want to bring up when I was watching this, like as we talked about this with Christmas Invasion, about Harriet Jones being justified and being right. Obviously, what these Sisters of Plenitude here are doing isn't okay.
Mm-hmm.
They've grown flesh, but they've grown it in such a way that they do resemble humans, which is definitely more of something that was influenced by the script and the realistic approach to how to make this series. They couldn't just do like a big blob in the floor like the Nesting Consciousness, because look how bad that looked in episode one.
And also budget.
But like as much as it is horrid and it's great to see the Doctor save the day and make a new subspecies of human, as for how they'd be treated out in society for being like a subspecies, that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
It's like Detroit become human all over again.
But you never know. It's a genius idea. We might have evolved into actually decent people. Maybe they killed off all the arse wipes and just, you know.
I was wondering what you were going to say.
What I was going to say as well.
But it's like, you know, taking the disease out of one thing and putting it into another to just keep alive is horrid, but it works.
Yeah.
So it's like, they are, at the end of the day, partly a villain of the story, but...
An accidental villain?
I do see a justification in what they did. Like, the Sisters of Plenitude don't get that kind of... It's weird, they're very much a grey villain, I think, because They're kind of framed as villains. They're kind of framed as not villains because at the end of the day, they're also healers as well. It's not like the great healer in a Revelation of the Daleks, because that's just Davros being a dumbass. They are doing something to benefit humanity.
But
and as much as they're bringing down an artificial species at the same time, it's clever.
It is.
Whether it's right is not.
I have a question.
Yes.
What the hell is... the point of Cassandra in this episode? Exactly.
That's a good point.
Because
that's
this
a very good
whole
point.
Episode could have played out without her, and it would have been basically exactly the same.
Admittedly, Chip is the person that lets out the first lot of test subjects. The Doctor wouldn't have done that.
He is.
Nor would have Rose. And then when they let the first ones out, that one that is the most sentient breaks the power thing to open everything. So
the whole point of her in this episode is that they needed to turn one little lever.
Almost.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I was sort of watching it and I was thinking, is her aim... Like, has she got an ulterior motive? Is her aim to bring down the hospital? Is her aim to get... I mean, obviously her aim is to get the money... But why does she want the money? Like, that's never explained. Is it literally?
I think
just
it's because she wants to take over Rose's body.
Yeah.
And just live, just get
but
out.
But she could
of
have done that with anyone, like literally anyone.
It's almost like she could have just let. I mean, I think if she hadn't have realised when Cassandra went into Rose's body that she was with the Doctor, she'd have just walked out.
Yeah, literally.
She would have just literally gone up the lift and left. but because the Doctor was there, she wanted to get revenge on him. She wanted to do him. I don't know. Admittedly, I'm assuming that being a trampoline, she hasn't got any for a while.
She also calls herself a trampoline.
She does call herself bye-bye trampoline, hello Blondie. Mm-hmm. So,
because isn't there a line where Rose says, like, where Cassandra says, Chip attends to my physical needs, and Rose goes, I hope that means food.
I hope that means food. It's also like, but if the only... Oh God, we'll go down this route again. It's like, there's only one thing that Chip could really do, and it just goes straight through you, Cassandra.
Oh, no.
You literally wouldn't feel it.
Oh.
Maybe.
How about we don't?
Well, we're gonna experience shag in a flat thing later on this series as well, folks. Look forward to
Orcs.
That. Oh boy,
Orcs.
We have got a great series ahead of us.
Oh boy.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, the one thing Cassandra does is like quite literally, like both sort of physically in the episode where she literally pushes Rose to the side, like inside her own head, like the Doctor saying, like you're like pushing her away and you're killing her. That's one of the things, like Rose. In reality, it's barely in this episode. You don't get to experience that relationship between the Doctor and Rose yet, which is something we get more next week. But in this,
I would just love to commend Billie Piper on her on her acting in this episode, because it's always been one of those things which is really difficult to portray someone through another person. And it's kind of like that person is pretending to be another person, and Billie Piper does it so well. Like, I know that she's not exactly Cassandra. Like, in my head, I feel like Cassandra is slightly different to how she is when she's inside Rose, but Billie Piper does it so much better than David Tennant, and that is the one thing that I kind of like always find a little cringy about this episode. Is
I feel
the
like
David
that might
Tennant
be
bit.
Deliberate though. I feel like that might be a more deliberate, you know, Billy, you need to take this like she's really trying to be you, whereas because she's only in Tennant twice and both times it's not for very long, they can just decide to make a joke out of it.
Oh yeah, absolutely, and I do appreciate that. But yeah, I just wanted like Billy's acting, because like there is one point,
it's really
there's
good.
One point when I picked up on it, where they're looking at the clones for like the first time, and Rose, as Cassandra, says something like, oh my god, what's happened to them? And she does it in the accent, but she does it in an accent that makes it sound like, not like she's trying too hard to put it on, because at the beginning she talks very on purpose, like, you know, she's really trying to like force it out, whereas when she says that line it sounds really natural, like that's just her normal voice. And I was like, oh, she does a bloody good job at this.
Yeah, she is, she's incredible in it. You can really, there is a very distinct distinction between Rose and Cassandra. Mm-hmm. As you said, Tennant's not the same, but I don't think that was the idea. And it's the same with Chip.
I love Chip.
Because is it an Irish accent in this?
I think so. Yeah.
But the actor who plays him isn't Irish. He's just a British actor. And you can hear that at the end when Cassandra takes over his body and he just takes the accent off. And it's so... like it's such a big distinction.
Yeah, it's so
you
jarring.
Can really see that Chip is gone, and it's really brilliant to see, honestly. Speaking of actors, we have what's her name? I need to just check this.
Martha's mum.
Oh, I well, this would be an interesting one to pronounce.
Ow.
It's Adjoa Ando.
Just poke myself in the eye.
Adjoa. Oh, really? Adjoa Ando. I can't pronounce her name. Martha's mum in series 3 and 4.
I'm crying. I'm sorry.
Is she in series 4? No, she's not in series 4. In series 3.
Series 3?
Martha's mum.
Wait, does Martha do 2 series?
I know. And the final 2 episodes. Oh, sorry. No, and she is in series 4.
I was
going to
say, because Martha does 2 series, doesn't she? Ow!
Well, she's in series 4 a little bit. Martha's mum is one of the cats. So that's super cool.
Doctor Who reusing actors and all that jazz.
Doctor Who reusing actors, it happens all the time. So she's there too. And... So yeah, the most of this is just a sort of banter thing between Cassandra and the Doctor, and it's quite a shame that we don't get to see more of the like the way that Cassandra is with Rose when she first meets her down in the basement of the whole, you know, you killed me and this is what happened at the end of the world. When she goes to see the Doctor, it just doesn't
really do anything.
Come back. It's quite a shame, because I'd have liked to have seen that more so. between Cassandra
and the
Doctor.
Yeah, she kind of takes all her anger out on Rose rather than the Doctor, which realistically, the Doctor is the one who kills her.
Doctor is the one who's definitely more responsible, but understandably Cassandra's more pissed at Rose because Rose is actually human.
Yeah, I was going to say, because Rose is the one that she's kind
of
like,
just a
random you were the
alien.
One who was being all bitchy about you being the last human and not me, so therefore...
Like, look, I used to be blonde and have curves.
Yeah, basically.
And actual boobs and an actual butt.
Basically, I'm jealous.
And so, I am jealous of you. This is why, like, it's almost perfect that you've arrived here because I want to be
Yeah.
you.
And now so, I can.
Yeah. It would have been more interesting to see it go that way. And then, you know, the rest of this is just like a big sort of chase
yeah.
through the hospital of here's all the infected, they're all getting out, they're all infecting people, a bunch of the nuns die, you get some pretty bad effects of them being infected. But the point when Martha's mum's cat, I guess,
yeah.
dies, you can see that they've given her the cat makeup and then given her the infected makeup over the top. And then they like airbrush away the
cat makeup.
Infection. And then they reveal, they brush away the airbrushing to reveal the infection as she's being infected. It's almost like they've done it in reverse.
Yeah.
Rather than paint on the infection like they did for every other time you see that happen
mm-hmm.
in the episode. They do it the other way
oh,
around.
Well.
Maybe they did it that first time and thought,
this
looks really bad.
Yeah.
But we don't have a plate of her being infected without the makeup on. So...
Oh, well,
we'll just do
we'll
it
just go with
normally
it.
From here on because then it happens to the other cat while they're on the ladder.
Oh my god, that's such an awful, awful scene. Like, that bit where she, like,
such a weird...
falls off the ladder and is just, like, plummeting to her death.
There's just a big chunk of that whole falling process that's cut. Like, you see her fall off and then suddenly...
She's like...
She's at terminal velocity mm-hmm. and it looks really dumb.
Because, I mean, also, that's not how people fall. They don't fall stock upright with, like, their head at the top and their feet at the bottom. You fall
and
horizontal.
Stay, like, completely rigid.
Yeah. And, like,
but
she doesn't flail. She's at, like you said, terminal velocity, which would take a good amount of falling
to
reach
and also, how big
that
is this
kind
damn hospital?
Of velocity. And,
yeah.
like, no, that's just... She'd have hit the floor way before then.
But the makeup on the actual... the human actors is really good.
Oh, yeah.
There's a book. It's not in the book that I have, because I've got like a book of every episode from the classic series all the way to the end of series
mm-hmm.
one. It's really, really broken.
Yeah.
Like it's literally like it's the dust cover sleeve is completely gone. The spine of it is knackered.
Mm-hmm.
I've read it a million times, but I don't know whereabouts I saw it. But there are pictures of the original versions of the makeup for the infected, and they were going to be a lot more gruesome.
Mm. I can imagine.
Like, there was some, like, full... Because they meant that they are basically like zombies.
Yeah.
Because they're going, help us. Like, it is very much a zombie episode. And they were going to look more like zombies. There's a very distinct image I can picture of a guy with, like... Almost like his lips have just, like, broken.
Ooh.
And it looks, like, really gross. It's not, like, horribly gory.
But then I suppose you kind of almost don't really get, like, how could they heal that? Like, to the point where he kind of comes back
there's that,
to human.
But also just... That's too scary. Mm-hmm. We can't do that. This is, you know, pre-Watershed BBC.
It's technically a children's show. Or a family show.
It's a strange one on that. But I think the makeup's fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's all good. The ending when the Doctor just goes down the elevator thing, which admittedly, compared to the cat falling, looks better.
Yeah. But the rope burns. The metal... rope burns.
His loins must
His
be steaming.
His thighs would literally be torn to shreds. Like, let's not joke
here. Sorry, I'll pat them.
I mean, I will tear more than his thighs to shreds, but that's not the point.
Just cook it up a cocktail, get in the lift, spray everyone, pass it on.
Yeah, it's
done.
Kind of like...
It's like,
great.
Okay, if all they had to actually... heal these grown humans was just the stuff they already had in bags. How did the cats not work it out for themselves? They're clever enough to really work out how to do this.
Technically, the reason that they had all the things to heal in the stuff in bags was because of them in the first place.
I know.
But like the Sisters of Plenitude wouldn't have needed to work it out before that opportunity. And before that opportunity, like when that opportunity arose, they ended up dying. So
would it be the case of maybe the amount of stock they had of this, of all these chemicals and all these medicines, would have just been wasted giving it all to mm-hmm. those, you know,
but also
however God knows
they
how many
wouldn't
people
have
there
known
are
that
in
it
those
was
tanks
like a almost like a contagious cure, like if that's the kind of way you can put it.
Yeah,
like
a cure
they wouldn't
spread
have
by
known
touch.
That the cure spreads by touch the same way the disease
and that's
does
the thing, like when you jumped when Rose jumps back into the lift after everyone's healed, you said why was she holding
what was
that
the point
lever?
Of her holding the lever,
and I was there thinking actually you know what, you're right, because it's never actually explained, but I think the reason why she holds the lever is so she stays out of the lift, because mm-hmm. the doctor does this, he's not even sure, like he doesn't have that moment of, you don't see him think what can I do, he just says novice Hayne, everyone get me all the things, tie them around my chest and we'll jump down a lift shaft. I think he's just having a wild guess. Mm-hmm. If he dies in there, he dies in there.
I mean, it could
there,
be to stop the lift
stay,
moving or
it's
to keep
stay
the lift doors open or something like that.
It could be to keep the lift doors open, exactly. But, I mean, the lifts are broken anyway, so they ideally wouldn't do anything. If he just sonics them open, they should stay
it
open.
It just doesn't really make
I think
sense.
I think he gets Cassandra / Rose to stay up on top, so in case he does send all the disinfectant off, he beckons them all in, he gets infected and dies because nothing actually happens, at least Rose mm-hmm. to him Rose
is
survives.
Safe, yeah,
even though if he dies
Cassandra would literally
kind of
just
that.
Be like lol bye,
Cassandra would just be stuck on top of that lift and they'd probably get to her eventually, or she'd just die of starvation because the whole place is quarantined. You've got the Karen there wanting to get mm-hmm. out, irrelevant of whether how many people she would infect. Wow, it sounds so relevant.
Why
to
is
right
everything
now.
So relevant,
wear a mask people, come on,
don't be a Karen.
Don't be a twat. Everything's quarantined, so it would just become like a self-contained quarantine zone mm-hmm. in the hospital. If the doctor didn't succeed, everything would just stay shut, and that'd be
yep.
that.
If only.
But it's a bit of a... Yeah. It's a bit of an abrupt ending.
Yeah.
A bit of a meh ending. It's an okay episode, I think. There's a lot of funny stuff, and there's a lot of cool stuff, but it's not...
I feel like a lot
it's,
of the episode
it's very
is
much
just
a
kind
first
of, like,
episode.
Humor filler. Like... Not yeah. a lot in the episode happens. They go to a hospital. Cassandra takes over some bodies, realizes what's going on. They let the people loose. They cure them. The end. Like, there's
yeah.
not a lot that happens realistically that is like some episodes where I feel like, you know, a lot of Doctor Who episodes, yes, they could be summed up by not a lot happens. But in some of them, not a lot happening isn't the issue because a lot is said, not necessarily done. Whereas in this one, I feel like a lot is done, but not necessarily said. And I don't mean yeah. in terms of, like, physically said. Like, obviously there's a lot of dialogue. I mean, like, words. Brain. Come on. What word are you looking for?
There's not much to take
like,
from this.
Oh, God. I wanted to say, like, theoretic, but that's not what I'm on about.
I think I know what you mean. There's like there's no like major character
yeah,
studies.
Yeah, not a lot
just,
is like
it's just event to event to event to
yeah,
event.
Yeah.
It's like I said, that's why I would love to have seen
said.
There be that there have been that thing between Cassandra and the Doctor because mm-hmm. we get a little bit of that with Rose. But if Cassandra is Rose, there should have been more between the two mm-hmm. of them. She should have kissed him and then slapped him and then punched him in the dick because that's
no,
how she felt about him supposedly.
Dick.
Not his dick. That needs to stay pristine. But
his sonic
yeah,
needs to be polished.
That's the end of the world. Very quickly, JB asks, how does New Earth Tennant's second episode compare to Eccleston's second episode, The End of the World?
Ooh.
This is a very good question. Honestly,
I feel like,
as I said,
I don't know whether you can compare them.
I think just more, not so much, even though there's a lot of stuff that's reused, you've got this sort of era of human civilization, you've got Cassandra, you've got the face of mm-hmm. Bo. As much as New Earth wasn't in End of the World, it was basically that same era.
Yeah.
So it kind of still feels relevant. We're back to somewhere familiar. I think Eccleston's is better.
Yeah.
Because it explores so much
uh-huh.
more. Exactly what you said, Amy. All the stuff they haven't done in this episode, they did do in End of the World. You explored the relationship between the Doctor and Rose. You explore the relationship between the Doctor and Jabe. You hear more about the Doctor's backstory in between the end of 1996 and now, with the whole "you're a Time Lord." Mm-hmm. Oh my God, that's a thing. You have the genuine bitter rivalry between Cassandra and Rose. You have all these other aliens you just sort of see and meet, and you know, just get to see. You get that sort of full face full of alien all in one go, in the same way Rose does in End of the World. Whereas in this one, as much as you're more used to it because you're already a series in, it does feel a little less,
I feel like, big in a way. Like Eccleston's series was obviously the kind of like the front runner for like bringing back Doctor Who, like, you know, and he did a fantastic job and blah blah blah, but like Eccleston's second episode had all these amazing like things, like introducing the world, introducing this, introducing that. David Tennant's second episode kind of was the hand-me-down of Eccleston's second episode.
I said there's so much that's reused.
And it's kind of like, I wonder, I mean, obviously I don't think David would have cared because he's still on Doctor Who and he gets his own storyline, and like, you know, you don't really, you wouldn't really be sort of sitting there thinking, oh, but this perhaps has been used before.
Yeah.
You, like, but it does, I don't know whether I would say that it feels like they're kind of cheaping out, but like, I don't know. I think Eccleston's is better purely because of the setting and, like you said, the fact that it's more of a character study, the fact that it goes into more depth with, like, the kind of moral ambiguity of the situation and, like, those kind of things. Whereas Tennant's second episode is... It's not bad. Like... It's definitely an episode that I remember.
Technically, it's Tennant's first episode because... As much as he's on Christmas Invasion, he's not really in that much. And technically, this is episode one of series two. So if you didn't see Christmas Invasion, you jump straight on with this, you will be left a little bit more behind.
Yeah, you will be kind of a bit befuddled.
As I said, there's nothing between the 10th Doctor and Rose. There's a bit at the beginning and she's like, oh, I love this. Mm-hmm. It's like, how long have you... like? It does kind of feel like Rose just sort of jumps on it. It's like, oh, he's hot now. I've realised he's the same person, but he's hot now, so I'm all in.
Now I can like, actually you don't get
more of that.
It's
what I'm going to be looking for next week in Tooth and Claw. That's what I'm looking for, is I want to see more of that Doctor Rose with Tennant be explored so much more.
I'm really excited for next week's episode.
The amount of actual screen time we've had between the Doctor, 10th Doctor, and Rose thus far is not actually that much. So that's what I'm looking for. So I would say that Eccleston's second episode is
much better than Tennant's.
Than this one. So, yeah. And I think you agree.
I'm super excited for next week's episode.
I do like Tooth and
Claw. It's really good.
But final question from Matthew Keck. Do you think that the message given by the face of both the Doctor next series could have gone here? And this is something I said to you, is that the fact that there is a message is something that you can play up on for a while. Mm-hmm. If you're going to introduce some kind of series arc that's going to be something that may be like a big thing, something that's going to be potentially referenced again during the course of the series, it should be something you wrap up in that series. Yeah. You don't leave it till the next series. Like, as I said this before, and I still stand by this, the Timeless Child name drop in series 11 of Doctor Who, because it was never mentioned again, I'm almost certain that was something that was just written into sound cool as like another name for the Doctor,
and then it became,
and then because the fans got really like
hyped on it,
you know, arse over tit about it, Chibnall went, actually, wait, maybe I could do something with this. And like, just if they drop a question there, if he said what the face of both says, which is next series, won't spoil it for you here, people will be expecting that thing that was discussed, or that the face of both told the Doctor, to be done by the end of the series.
Yeah,
which wouldn't happen.
I think it's really good that they gave you that break between this being like vaguely mentioned by like the Sister of Plenitude saying like, it's said that he will speak to a traveller, someone alone like him, and blah blah blah. I feel like her saying that and obviously the Doctor going, I thought you had something to tell me, and he's like, lol, no, I've come alive again, I'm off to
I've had my poo,
we're off to travel the world. I feel like planting that early in this series and then really, really, really not mentioning it like ever again until the message is revealed in the next series is spot on, because it's like by the next week's episode, you've forgotten all about it, really. Like, I didn't go into the next episode thinking, oh, I wonder what that message is from the face of Boat, lol. And so therefore, it's kind of like, oh yeah, that was that thing. Oh, there was that thing. Oh my God, there was that thing. And then it's like, oh, that was a really cool way to do that whole plot. Well done, Russell T. Davies. This is why you are king.
Yeah. So that answers your question. No, they should leave it until when they actually
do
see the face of Bo again, because it's obvious, because he says, I'll see you again for the third time.
The third and final time.
Time.
When I poop and, no more.
I've pooped myself out of my glass jar.
It explodes.
And then finally, right at the end, Chip gives himself to Cassandra. Cassandra takes his body. As said, the accent goes, he's just plain British, and it's so jarring that it's really so clear that it's quite weird. You're looking and thinking, that's not Chip anymore.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
I love him. He's not Chip anymore. As an actor, I think he's fantastic.
He's phenomenal. He's so good in it. And then the Doctor feels that remorse for Cassandra. Again, that's something I think would have felt a lot more natural for him to tell her and be like, "Ashley, I'm going to be nice to you." If there were more of a thing between the Doctor and Cassandra as Rose, or Rose.
But
as
then
Cassandra,
again, he sees that bit where she's quite vulnerable after they get out of the lift shaft when they're climbing the ladder,
and he reaches his hand out, but I don't feel like that's enough.
It's not.
I would have liked to have seen it explored more, but it's you're right. It is something. So they then go back to that party. The Rose sees on the projector at the beginning of the episode, and Chip goes up to Cassandra and says to her, or Cassandra goes to Cassandra and says, "You're so beautiful," and then basically just dies there and then. And at first I said to you, this is basically the biggest I'm going to wank myself off moment. Like, it's like going to yourself and thinking, mate, you are hot.
Yeah.
And then yourself saying back, thanks also
me.
Very hot person. Yeah.
But then at the same time,
it's such a big self-egotistical thing, but then
I
you
obviously
said
to you, like,
side.
It's kind of like he's... Oh, sorry. Yeah, we'll refer to he for Chip because,
it is kind of Chip.
He sort of said, like, he's going up to her and saying, like, you're beautiful, because A, I don't think she's ever really heard that, but B, it's kind of like... He's saying it to herself. She's saying it to herself in like a kind of way of just being like, I promise you, no matter what you believe in the future, like, you are beautiful. And I feel like that's like a affirmation that a lot of us kind of like need a lot of the time, is like, no matter what the world thinks of you and no matter what you think you should be, you are absolutely fine just the way you are. And it is that kind of like thing of when it comes from someone else, you are like, especially in that kind of circumstance, you're almost more inclined to listen to it because he said, like, no, truly, you are very beautiful. But I did have a random thought, is that what if him saying that to her changed her outlook on life, and then therefore she never ended up being the bitchy trampoline? Would that have changed
maybe.
The course of the future?
It's something that maybe the Doctor allows it to happen because it's not Cassandra herself. It's somebody else with the mind of Cassandra. Mm. So it's not like touching literally herself, which would also send everything haywire.
But also it's kind of like... like maybe, obviously, Chip was... She goes through the whole thing saying, Chip's only got a half life, so he's bound to go eventually and whatever... But maybe the reason that he goes when he goes is because of that crossing paths. Like, maybe because she then kills off the future version of herself, and so that's why Chip dies.
You're right. Maybe seeing all this stuff happen in the hospital, seeing lives be so fragile and realising that, I've gone on for so long. I'm on the way out. She knows. She says, he's dying.
Yeah.
He's going. And yeah, maybe that is that thing that's like, this is something that I just needed to hear from somebody. So, I look at it one way and think, I don't like Cassandra. She's a bitch. She's just being really egotistical and telling herself she looks beautiful. Whereas you look at it and think, actually...
She's telling herself what she needs to
hear. She's telling herself what she knows. She remembers from that time of her life that she wanted to hear that. so she could be that person, which is really sweet. Yeah. But bitchy trampoline, so...
Yeah, what can you do?
But there we go. That is about going to wrap up our first episode of Series 2.
Ish.
Technically, Series 2, Episode 1.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
From here on, we'll just say this episode one. Somebody asked on the Discord, by the way, there's a Discord for Who Culture now, if you want to come and join and chat about stuff and hopefully not be difficult about things. Please respect everyone else's opinions,
yes.
Please. Then you can come and join that. I'll stick a link in the description if I remember. I probably will. I hope I will.
Fingers
I
crossed.
I might not. If I haven't, send me a tweet at PickupChangeToe, or you can tweet at Who Culture using the hashtag EscapingCasturberus. If you've got any questions regarding next week or... hopefully next week, we're really going to try and stick to it. As I said, we're really going to try and stick to it, but again, it depends what life throws at us.
I feel like maybe we should just not promise when we're going to release the next episode, because it always ends up going
to tip.
But I
don't want to be like that. I don't want to leave people hanging, even though we have to.
I promise you, we will always try and record a following episode.
Yeah, we always do try and record. We don't just think, ah, do not
like,
screw it.
If it ever
off,
stops,
because we do just get to
we
sit.
Will let you know why it has stopped.
Yeah. We don't just try and pie it off, because we just get to sit and watch Doctor Who and talk rubbish for an hour. If you do have any questions regarding Tooth and Claw next week, then please do tweet them to us, or you can put them in the comments section below if you're on YouTube. If you do tweet them to us, you can either tweet it to at Who Culture, and some of you have tweeted me specifically, but please put hashtag Escaping Casturberus, or like, you know, hashtag Who Culture if you can't be bothered to type that out, just because it makes it so much easier for us to see it. Because not to do some kind of like Twitter popularity flex, but if it's been like 3 weeks since we last did an episode, if there are questions that you've tweeted me directly on
Twitter,
there's a good chance I might have lost them, especially with some stuff I've tweeted that have sparked into some very heated discussions about JK Rowling, etc. So there's a lot of stuff to scroll through to make sure I hadn't missed any. So if you do tweet us, please use the hashtag EscapingCasturberus, or even better, tweet it at Who Culture.
Or
not
tweet me if you really can't find
Amy.
Who Culture.
Where
or
can they find
whatever,
you, Amy?
Because as much as I don't use Twitter, if you were to tweet me, I would see it and then respond. Like, I do still have Twitter, I just don't scroll through it anymore.
Where can they find you?
So you can find me
Twitter,
at @Ames_Elizabeth, and I don't know why you wouldn't know how to spell it, but if you don't know how to spell it, it's AIMS and then _Elizabeth. Because some people don't know how to spell Ames, which I found is very weird. But sure.
But anyway, thank you all very, very much for listening. It's good to be back again. Apologies for the little delay. We'll try and keep you better updated if we get to a Wednesday and it turns out we can't record or we haven't, and I will just say sorry guys.
We'll probably put it in the Discord or like tweet it or something.
Put it on the Discord or tweet it. Follow us on Twitter at Who Culture. But until we see you again, take care of yourselves throughout all of this. Please, because things are still going on, even if you're in the UK. Especially if you're in the UK.
Who'd have thought it'd been almost a year?
Take care of yourselves. Wear a mask. If you need to stay inside and watch more Doctor Who,
that's fine.
I highly recommend you do that. Until we see you again, take care.
Goodbye.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.